Hi, this is Alonzo Bowden. I want to welcome you to episode 332 of my podcast, Who's Paying Attention? And I guess you are, but maybe Republicans aren't. Maybe Democrats aren't either. So lots of talk today. It's November 3rd, day after Election Day, about Virginia and the new governor, the Republican, being elected. And, you know, people, oh, my gosh, what happened? What happened? Listen, I am not the least bit surprised that Glenn Youngkin, the Republican, Trumper, whatever, was elected in Virginia. It's simple, okay? You start out, first of all, America has far more Republicans and Republican-leaning and Trumpers than they admit publicly. Okay, let's get that out of the way. A lot of people, they say one thing when they go in that voter's booth, they're voting a different way that from the day Trump was elected. And you know something? I bet there'll be no talk about Glenn Youngkin's election being a fraud, about there being voter fraud in Virginia, and we need to recount the recounted recounts. And nah, probably won't happen. But anyway, listen, it's quite simple, okay? You go to the suburbs, you tell them Democrats raised the price of gas, right? Gas prices are high now. Sprinkle on some critical race theory, add in a little defund the police, and then tell them the trans people are out to convert their kids. And finally, you top it off with a vaccine mandate. Boom, you got a Republican. There's an article. There is no. I love this title. It says, "American politics are controlled by voters with the memory of a golden retriever." Listen, I said it on my first special back in 2008. You know, America has the attention span of a hamster on crack. It however you want to word it, this happens all the time. The Republicans screw up the country. We elect a Democrat for a minute, and then they're like, you know, things ain't so bad. Let's get another Republican. So this is what's going to happen, and it'll probably happen in the midterms. I even heard, and this was just fantastic as to how well the Republicans manipulate these the storylines and the news and the coverage and whatever. You know, we've had all these things about removing voter rights in Texas, in Georgia, et cetera, all over the country. The Republican talking point is that, you know, voter rights were removed under a Democratic president. That's right. These people, it is so easy to manipulate these Republicans, okay? So you had all the Trump stuff, that's including COVID fatalities, the insurrection, all of that. That's all gone, okay? We forgot about that. You know why? Because the Democrats are operating a cannibalism ring and Tom Hanks is leading it. Sounds ridiculous? They believe it. Listen, remember, there were Republicans in Dallas waiting for JFK Jr., who died. He's dead. He died in 1999. They were waiting for him to come back and confirm his alliance with Donald Trump. There is nothing a Republican can do that will stop a Trumper from supporting him. And there are far more Trumpers than anyone wants to admit, okay? In North Carolina, vacant seat in the House of Representatives, the Republicans seated Donnie Loftus. Where was Donnie Loftus on January 6th? At the insurrection. Yes, they put an insurrectionist into their House of Representatives. What did Democrats do? They walked out. Symbolic. Nobody cares. Democrats, you walk out, they'll change a law. You might not be allowed back in. Marjorie Taylor Greene, in the news every day. Every day we have to listen to her. And you look at her and you're like, this woman's crazy. This is ridiculous. Blah, blah, blah. No, it's not. It works. It works. A friend of mine sent me a message after Virginia saying, what is going on? I'll tell you what's going on. Politics as usual. Okay? This is America. This is politics as usual. Am I happy about it? No. But let's be honest. America has a couple of pockets of progressive happened to be two big pockets, one called New York, another called Los Angeles, or you could even say California, even though after that recall nonsense, you keep a side eye on California. But this is the truth. And until Democrats acknowledge this and get willing to fight and get willing to get in the press, and, you know, you listen, I don't know how you battle, you know, something as ridiculous as Democrats have a cannibalism ring, but you got to come up with something. You got to come up with something, because it is so easy to scare these Republican white people, and that's what you do. They operate on fear. I've said it a million times, fear of other, black, brown, immigrant, gay, trans, whatever, just fill in the blank, and they're scared of it. Critical race theory, we're going to accurately teach the history of the United States so we can learn from it. No, we're going to teach everyone to hate your white children, because it's all about the children. It's always about the children. We better get used to this. Unfortunately, this is going to keep happening. Okay. I don't know. You have people voting or supporting not taxing billionaires. You have people barely making a living, if that, saying that we shouldn't tax billionaires. If Elon Musk's taxes went to the same rate that you and I pay, it would take him hours to pay his annual tax bill. Hours of earnings. That's how much money, and that's how fast his money, his earnings go. Okay? And I got nothing against billionaires in principle, but they could pay a fair share and not even notice. They said something like, if he gave up $6 billion, he could feed like 42 million people or some crazy number like that. The man's worth $210 billion. If you had $210, I think you could afford $6, you know? So but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter, because this is, am I a negative person? Am I giving up too soon? Maybe. But I've seen the pattern. We've seen the pattern. Okay. We have seen the pattern. Bill Clinton cleaned up after Reagan and Bush, right? Balanced the budget. Bush came in, not only destroyed the budget, and, you know, yeah, he had to deal with 9/11, but then he started the Iraq War, which was totally ridiculous and tragic and sad. And while he was busy doing that, bankrupted the U.S. economy, destroyed the house. You remember the housing? No, we don't remember. That's the thing. No one remembers the housing crisis of the 2007, 2008, 2009, right? No one remembers that the U.S. auto industry was gone, on the brink of extinction. Who saved it? Democrat Barack Obama came in, saved the U.S. auto industry. Yeah, again, just imagine if a white president had saved the American auto industry. They'd be carving his name into stone, his face into stone somewhere. Okay. But anyway, Obama had to deal with the housing crisis. He had to deal with the subprime mortgage thing. He had to try to regulate bankers and this thing of loaning money to people that they knew couldn't pay it back because the government would cover it, blah, blah, blah. Tons of bailout money, et cetera, et cetera. Mind you, whole time having to fight against Mitch McConnell and the Republicans. And he did all of that. Somehow got a health care plan passed that they fought and fought and fought and still fight, even though rural Republicans are the ones who don't have hospitals and are dying because they refuse to take that Obamacare money. But he did it. He did all of that. And what was our reward? Donald Trump. That's what happened after Barack Obama cleaned it up. Now we've got Joe Biden trying to clean up the mess that Trump left, COVID, the economy, blah, 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 blah. And they're already starting to elect Republicans again. So this is the cycle. This is a cycle. What's going to break the cycle? I don't know. Forget Marjorie Taylor Greene. Herschel Walker is a leading Republican Senate candidate in Georgia. Herschel Walker doesn't live in Georgia, but he did play football, and he is a friend of Donald Trump. If you are a friend of Donald Trump, the Republican Party likes you. Herschel Walker pointed a gun and his wife threatened to kill her. Well, what'd she do? I guess that's the argument. I don't know. The cult, and that is what the Republican Party has become. And by the way, I'm going to play an interview I did with Michael Steele, who is Michael Steele, formerly the chairman of the Republican Party, a black Republican man. You know, I've joked about black Republicans plenty. Michael Steele and I have talked a few times on his podcast, on my radio show, and soon on my podcast. We'll be talking again. But he's what I call a reasonable Republican. And even he says the party is gone. The party is gone. It's the Trump party. But that's what people want. Let's stop pretending that this isn't what people want. Let's stop pretending that Tucker Carlson isn't super popular. Okay. And that people believe this stuff. Okay. Let's stop pretending that this is how ignorant they are. They believe somehow that if Biden were to resign, Trump would become president. They don't understand Kamala Harris would become president, which I'd be okay with. All right. The cult is willing to die for their beliefs, plain and simple. Now, well, they claim they are. They're not. Okay, so New York, for example, NYPD said 10,000 cops are going to quit over the vaccine mandate. It was actually 34. No one has spoken on this police and the vaccine mandate better than D.L. Hughley. Kudos, props to D.L., who simply said when all these cops, Seattle, New York, wherever, are complaining in Chicago about the vaccine mandate, what did he say? They should have just complied. Where have we heard that before? Brilliant, D.L. So, yeah, they claim that they're going to quit, but they didn't quit. 34 of them went on unpaid leave because they don't want to get vaccinated. How willing are they to not get vaccinated? You've heard me talk about this before. You've heard me talk about the Herman Cain Awards, the anti-vaxxers who are willing to die for their belief in a cult. Police, anti-vaxxer willing to die. Buddy Crabtree, police chief in a small town, 650 people, called Idler, Alabama, refused the vaccine. Now he's dead. Of course, as he was dying, he said, you should get the vaccine. He said, you should get three shots. And by the way, I've had my third shot. I've got two Pfizers and a Moderna. So I think I'm all right. But anyway, I don't wish death on anyone. I don't wish death on any of these people. I wish they would shut up. I wish they would allow for science. You know, somebody sent me a thing recently with Russell Brand talking this. Russell Brand's a comic. It's all over the place. I don't know how you fight it. I don't know how you argue with it. Jen Psaki, the press secretary for Biden, brilliant. She got COVID. Someone in her family had it, brought it home. She got it. She's dealing with mild symptoms. Why? Because she got vaccinated. Every doctor, every scientist, the real ones say that if you get vaccinated, it's not perfect. You still may get it. Some people say everyone's going to get it, but you get a mild case. That's the difference. A mild case versus, death. But this is what they do, and this is how much they believe in the cult. All right? This is how afraid they are. Listen, between defund the police and critical race theory, and the critical race theory really has taken off as the thing they use to scare white people. And it works. Okay? It works. The vaccine mandate, the freedom. All right, listen. There was a survey done by the Kaiser Family Foundation. It says that, 5% of Americans say if their employer required them to get vaccinated or submit to weekly testing, they would quit. and then it goes up to 1 in 10 if they don't get weekly testing offered. And this isn't true, by the way. These people are not going to quit. They're claiming they're going to quit, but their bills ain't going to quit coming. This is like Andrew Wiggins in the NBA. I talked about this. Andrew Wiggins refused to be vaccinated for religious reasons. The NBA said, you won't get paid. He was vaccinated the next day, which means Jesus cost $9 million a season. Now, Kyrie Irving is still sitting out. And I told you, I respect Kyrie Irving because he's standing by his decision. He's losing money. It's not working. This is the choice. You don't want to get vaccinated means you quit your job, even if your job is NBA All-Star, which that's Kyrie Irving's job. So this is his choice. And if you make that choice and you stand by it, good for you. But most of these people just talk. But when it comes to voting, they're voting. And next year, when the midterm elections come, it's going to be harder for Democrats to vote because Republicans are doing everything to make it more difficult for them to vote. And a lot of people who you think are moderate or who don't like Trump or whatever, they're voting that way. The Trump conservative agenda is much bigger in the United States than the progressive agenda, meaning I shouldn't say agenda, I should say supporters. There are more Trump supporters than there are progressives. There are more Marjorie Taylor Greene supporters than there are AOC supporters. Okay, Alexandria Ocasio. Yeah, it's I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I will tell you this. The COVID regulations, the vaccine mandates, which work, by the way, which work. Science has also proven and polls have shown that when you have mask mandates, the numbers go down. Here in LA is a perfect example. Fewer people are dying of COVID. Why? Because they had to bring back masks and because they have vaccine mandates in many workplaces and public places, etc. But forget about that. None of that matters. None of that matters because that's just truth. And Republicans conquered truth a long time ago. Alternative facts, people. The memory of a golden retriever. Speaking of dogs, the Hulk is fine. I posted on my Facebook, if you go to my Facebook, is it still Facebook? I don't know, whatever name, change the name to. But an encounter I had with a guy who said that my dog was limping, and he actually asked me, did I hit my dog? Of course not. And I wrote about it and the frustration of dealing with that as a black man, because you can't get angry. I live in a mixed neighborhood. And trust me, if I got angry and went off on an old white man, some Karen calls the cops, I'm in trouble. And I know how that goes. But I wrote about it and I appreciate the support I got from people who read it. You can read it on my Facebook page. Michael Steele is coming up. I could go on and on. I'm not going to talk in circles about this. Oh, here's another thing that happened. It's interesting. So the Atlanta Braves, who I don't like. I don't like the Atlanta Braves, but I can't stand the Houston Astros. So the Atlanta Braves won the World Series, and the tomahawk chop, which is considered racist by Native American people, continues to be their cheer, and nothing has been done about it. And someone who is Native said, it's all about the money, and the Major League Baseball isn't giving up the money. And they're upset because baseball did pull the All-Star game out of Atlanta because of the racist voting rules, but they continue to allow the, quote, tomahawk chop. I don't know the solution to that, but maybe we should respect the fact that people of Native descent are offended and say, hey, we can cheer some other way. Anyway, they won the World Series, so that's that. Michael Steele from last summer, my KBLA interview. I appreciate Michael Steele. He's good to talk to. He's funny. An unexpected friendship. And that's what happens when you keep your mind open and take a chance. Try something. Talk to someone who's different than you. Talk to someone you don't know. You guys are the best. Thank you for the support on the podcast. I've got some other things coming up. I'm looking at doing a show on a new platform called Fireside Chat that's going to be pretty good. I will have that coming up. I'm going to be in Tampa all weekend at Side Splitters Comedy Club. I love Tampa. I always have a great time there. And like I said, I got my third shot, so I'm ready to go to Florida. Who's paying attention? You are. Coming up, some Michael Steele. Thank you guys for the support. Thanks for listening. Listen, register, be ready to vote, because these elections, this is just a preview. This is a preview. New York got a good mayor, and, you know, I'm not going to go through all the election results all around the country. And it wasn't all Republicans that won. A lot of Democrats won a lot of more local level elections, mayors, etc. But they're using this as a indicator for the midterms. Is it all fear? Is it all gloom and doom? I don't know, but let's be ready to vote next year. Who's paying attention? You are. Thank you. Have a great week. And I don't know. Merry Christmas, because the music has already started. Thank you. Hello, this is Alonzo Bowden. The show is called Who's Paying Attention? Right now, I am honored to have a very special guest come on to the show. This gentleman you will recognize right away from all of his work. He was the head of the Republican National Party. He has a brilliant podcast. And when I give you the name of the podcast, I will give you the name of the guest. He is the host of the Michael Steele podcast, and he's here right now. Michael Steele, how are you, sir?
Hey, brother. I'm good. How's it going, man?
It is going great, man. I will tell the audience that I was on your podcast, and it was fantastic. Yes. I had a great time.
We had a blast.
Thanks for returning the favor and coming on to KBLA Talk.
Absolutely. It's great to be in your house and hang out in your neighborhood for a little bit. I love the unapologetically progressive. I love that. I haven't found a progressive yet who's going to apologize for too much of anything, so this makes a lot of sense to me.
Listen, I'm unapologetically a comedian, and they've been asking us for apologies for the past 3 or 4 years, and the answer is no. We are not apologizing.
Nah, man, it's really good to be with you, and great to have another conversation with you as well.
It is great to have you here. So, Michael, I have to get into it right away, and I want to tell all my listeners, you are someone that we seem to have lost. You are what I like to call a reasonable Republican, and mm-hmm. I want to ask you, how did the crazies take over the Republican Party? I mean, we hear it over and over, these extremists, what happened?
That's a great question. You know, and a lot of people like to sort of pin it to Donald Trump, and they want to put everything on the house of Trump. I don't. In fact, having seen some of this, not just during my time as national chairman with the Tea Party, for example, but even going back before then, you began to see elements of this seedbed of kind of a distasteful politics. It really kind of goes back when you stop and think about it to the 1964 presidential campaign with Barry Goldwater, where he, you know, very clearly broke from the tradition of the party to stand with civil rights, to stand with even Republican senators who were at that time working with Lyndon Johnson to complete the work of the Kennedy administration in this space, working with Bobby Kennedy. And it was just this idea, political strategy sort of kicked in that, you know what? We can get these Southern white voters to vote for us. Because remember, the South was decidedly Democratic until probably the 1980s. And the North was decidedly Republican. You know, we always just talk about the Northeastern Republican and New England Republicans. And so the strategy for Nixon was to figure out, and Goldwater was to figure out, how do we win in the South, because you could not win the presidency without picking up one or two Southern states. And so that began, that opened the door when the Democrats finally embraced civil rights. White Southern men said hell no, got out as fast as they could. and Nixon was there waiting for him. That was the Southern strategy in 1968. And we saw Reagan embrace religious conversion of that with the moral majority in the 1980 campaign, which is the first time they put a pro-life plank, for example, in the party's platform, because the party was decidedly more libertarian. We did not think the government or the state should have a say in what individuals do in the privacy of their home and how they handle, you know, the intimacy between them and their doctor, things like that. So you saw that breakdown begin for a lot longer period, Alonzo, than people like to think or recall. And now we are witnessing the fruit, the ugly bastard fruit of those efforts.
Right, because now it has gotten to a point, and I understand what you're saying about the Southern strategy and the flip in parties, which makes a lot of the arguments hypocritical, right, when they talk about, you know, that Lincoln was a Republican and everything. I mean, we know what they're saying because the identity of the parties has changed since then.
Exactly.
But you brought up a few things, and you brought up Reagan, and it's very interesting. So Ronald Reagan, for a long time, was the ultimate conservative, right? He was the model that they talked about, and
right,
you know,
right, this the and modern that. Day version, right? The modern day encapsulation of conservatism that was sort of formed originally with Bill Buckley in the 1950s and others back in the day, yeah.
But today, when and again, I'm talking like this past weekend at that CPAC convention, you know, when you had Patrick talking about Soros is bringing in all the Latinos to convert to citizens to vote them out of power, and you have, you know, I can't keep up with Marjorie Taylor Greene's latest crazy. I'm sorry, I just don't have the energy.
I don't try. I don't need to put that level of stupid anywhere near my brain. No.
would Reagan have even been invited to today's party?
No, he would not have been invited to CPAC. If he'd gone, he would have been booed off the stage. And in fact, Ronald Reagan in a Republican primary today probably would lose it decidedly. Trump or a Trump-like candidate would vilify and castigate his positions, his views, and make a mockery of them, as we saw Trump do to Bush 41. Bush 43, and other then, you know, well-respected Republican candidates for office for president in the 2016 campaign. The difference, though, in what is sad is that Ronald Reagan would never have capitulated. Ronald Reagan would have called out the anti-liberal, the illiberal, anti-democratic behavior of President Trump. He would have stood that ground. He would not have taken the side door like we've seen others do from, I guess, you know them.
Yeah, we don't have to go down the list.
there's so many, you know, Lindsey Graham et al. So the reality of it is it would have been a very interesting fight inside the party for the heartbeat of the party. And so what's left for those of us who remain engaged in that fight for however long we are in that fight, because no, a win is not guaranteed here. It just isn't.
Right.
Trumpism is the worst kind of infection the body politic can have. And warding off the you know, the effects of that, the fever that comes from that, it becomes progressively harder to do, as we've seen.
Well,
so there are efforts out here to try to do that, but it's hard.
I want to say I'm glad you said it and I didn't about Trumpism. Okay, so you certainly nailed it. I am talking to Michael Steele. Yes, the Michael Steele. And what I call a reasonable Republican, I am pretty sure, Michael, that right now you're not wearing a gun on your hip, nor is there one mounted over your desk in your office. Would that be accurate?
No, That would be incredibly accurate. No, it's not. The only thing about it over my desk are my diplomas. That's it, baby. I'm not, no. That's the only weapon I need out there on the street. No, so, I don't get this mindset around guns. I don't get it. But okay, whatever.
Right, right. And again, this is to our listeners. And please call and join this conversation, because I love talking to Michael. Because Michael, I can talk to you without falling into one of those shouting matches over, you know, my right to have guns or whatever else. And I want to talk to you about this. We've lost the ability to compromise. Now, you know, we have right. Mitch McConnell repeatedly saying, you know, back when Barack Obama was president, my only job is to make him a one-term president. With Joe Biden, 100% of my focus is on standing up to this administration. And I was just reading today, there was rumor that he might be okay with the infrastructure bill as far as repairing the roads and bridges, but he's certainly not going to go any more than that on the budget. And to be fair, even though it's not equal, in other words, it's not 50-50, the Democrats can be the same way. I mean, Nancy Pelosi, it was the same fight from the other side, you know, and sometimes I laugh at the fact, like, her and McConnell love fighting so much, they don't really care who the president is, as long as they can fight. When did we lose... When did we lose the country comes first, the people come first, versus my party has to win, and if you compromise, you will be penalized by your own political party?
If I'm gonna peg a period or a time, the election of 2000, the Bush versus Gore election. Prior to that election, and there were some elements that had begun to ferment going back probably to when the Republicans took the House in 1994. A lot of that was animated by Newt Gingrich, who came in with a guerrilla mentality, sort of, you know, take no prisoners, full bore after your opponent. So in other words, Democrats are no longer opponents, they are there. Republicans were no longer or adversaries, they were, you know, an obstacle. And so there were these dynamics that began to shape itself inside the House of Representatives that then bled out onto the streets, if you will. But also things that were beginning to happen in various state legislatures around the country, where one side or the other assumed control and power after, let's say, a long time on the sidelines, and wielded the legislative hammer mercilessly, right? And so all of that animosity and angst and sort of tension builds up, and it gets to a point where you can't have a Newt Gingrich, a Tip O'Neill, Ronald Reagan kind of rapprochement to politics where, yeah, we're going to beat each other up, but we're going to do so in a civilized manner, and we're going to do so with the common goal of getting this business done. The last time we saw that, actually, and ironically, during the Clinton administration, when Newt Gingrich and the Clinton administration worked to balance the budget, reform welfare, all while they were impeaching the man.
Right.
Could you imagine that, in today's environment? So it's been around for a while. The 2000 election really kind of broke it down along the political lines that we see now. Prior to the 2000 election, blue states were Republican states, red states were Democratic states. That flipped. Roll had a hand in flipping that narrative in that 2000 election to get Bush elected. He did a scorched earth, you know, in his campaign that sort of animated some passions.
Right. Michael, my engineer is saying we're having a little problem with your phone coming in and out. I'm not sure what... What type of phone you're using?
You guys are clear on my ear. Yeah, I'm in a good spot here in my office. So
okay, you're fine now. You're fine now. It's just okay. A word or two. Maybe they're censoring you, Michael. Maybe they're listening.
Uh-oh.
And they've got a scrambler. So
would not surprise me.
I want to talk now. I want to talk to you about you, because your job seems in this atmosphere, your job is so difficult. So when you were Republican National Chair, I mean, a big part of your job was to help Republican candidates get elected, correct?
Right.
So
yeah.
So when you're in the room with these candidates, and they want to go extreme, and you had to deal with that Tea Party era. You didn't have to deal with the Trump crazies. You had the Tea Party era, though. How do you talk to them and try to say, hey, if you go this extreme, you know, like you may win a primary, but it's not going to go farther. Now, how do you bring them back or calm them down? How did you do that?
Little thing called party discipline. So I think it's very important for people to understand fundamentally the role of any chairman, county chairman, state chairman, national chairman, is to raise money and win elections. That's your mandate. It's all about that. It's you don't have a policy position. You don't get to decide big or small decisions for legislators or anything like that. It is to win elections. And what my discipline has been from the time I was a county chairman here in Prince George's County, Maryland, has always been about, and probably because I was at a disadvantage, living in a county where we were outnumbered 10-1 in a state where Republicans are outnumbered 2-1 here in Maryland, you have a different approach to politics, right? I have to win. I have to convert voters. I have to win over voters. I have to have my candidates have a with voters in running in precincts and in counties and areas of the state where they don't have the luxury of having more Republicans than Democrats. So you have to be able to have that conversation. Back to your point about compromise, for me it wasn't compromise, it was consensus. How do you build a consensus with the voters out there around the things where you may differ if you're pro-life or very strong with the amendment? You have to let them know those positions are not an obstacle for their support. And so that was one. As national chairman, yeah, I sat in some meetings. Now, the Tea Party for me in 2009 and 2010 was not the same party of 2012 and beyond. It's a very different group of people. And a lot of those candidates that I helped get elected, part of the 63 House seats that we picked up, are no longer in the House. They were beaten by the next iteration of Tea Party, which then morphed into Trumpism. Christine O'Donnell, who New Jersey from Delaware, and you know, she was out there talking about not being a witch and all this. I'm like, no, we're not doing that.
Before you vote for someone, don't you want to clearly establish that they're not a witch? I mean, doesn't that get in the way?
Yeah, you do. in the weirdest kind of way, it becomes a priority. You know, yeah, you really want to be clear about that first off. But here's the rub. I did have a candidate who was running in a primary in a state, running for the U.S. Senate in 2010. And I had a conversation because I wanted to talk with all the candidates that I was working with. And I sat down with him and said, oh, you know, so what do you want to do? He sort of laid out his agenda. And I said, well, that's really good. It's ambitious. How do you intend to get that done? Harry Reid is the speaker, is the majority leader of the Senate. I said, how are you going to work with Harry Reid? He says, I'm not going to the Senate to work with Harry Reid. I said, then how are you going to get anything done if you don't figure out how to work with the majority leader of the other party? He said, well, I'm going there to fight for, you know, these things. And I said, well, you can fight all day long, baby, but you need votes. you can fight till the cows come home, but if you don't have 51 votes or 60 votes, you ain't doing crap. And I told him straight up, I said, well, look, you need to be very clear about you. If that's your attitude, we can't support you. So the party, if you get the nomination, I'm going to have a hard time supporting you in a general election, because that's not how you're going to be successful. You're going to be a one-term senator in that case. And so that's not what this is about. So, and we didn't. Unfortunately, he didn't win the primary. About for them should be. Having been a candidate, having won and lost elections, having come from a very blue state, and had the success of winning in a blue state, I had a better appreciation of what voters, at the end of the day, regardless of their party affiliation, really wanted to hear from candidates and what their expectations were.
Michael,
and the problem we have right now is that candidates don't meet that standard.
Right. Listen, Michael, we're coming up against the bottom of the hour. We're going to go to news and traffic, and I don't want to leave and lose you without talking about your podcast. Tell us about who's on your podcast, who you talk to, what you talk about.
Well, you know, it's just, it's a conversation. I kind of like the barbershop style. You know, folks come on, we sort of sit down and just talk, and we talk about big issues. I've had, you know, big name Democrats on my podcast. I've had Republicans come on the podcast and independents. I've had, as they say, you know, decidedly progressive individuals come on, like yourself.
I had a great time being unapologetically progressive and funny on the podcast.
and it was a hoot. And it's a lot of fun. We have members of Congress. And so it's the Michael Steele podcast. Check it out where you get your podcast. It really is just a good, honest conversation about what's going on. I don't try to hold back. It's raw sometimes. It's earthy. But it's real. And that's how it is. And the only way you can be smart and honest about things is to be real about them, I think. So we have a lot of fun, and we have a lot of good people who come through. And, you know, Adam Kinzinger, congressman from Illinois. You know, I've had a number of leading Democrats from the Biden campaign come on. So it's been nice fun. Let's put it that way. Nice fun.
Michael, thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Michael Steele. You have to listen to the Michael Steele podcast. And Michael, I want to ask, and I want to just put in my bid to get you back when we get to our recall election, because, you know, here in California, we're going to have some crazy yes. candidates going. I want to run down the candidates with you and get the professional opinion. Will you help me with that when we get to the recall?
I'll be happy to do that. I actually am watching this recall and have formed an opinion about the potential outcome of it. So,
thank you.
Absolutely. We'd love to do
that. We're going to news and traffic. Thank you, Michael Steele.